Okay, let's go ahead and start this meeting of San Luis Obispo County Integrated Waste Management Authority. Today is Wednesday, November 12th, 2025, 1:30 p.m. Roll call, please, Janet.
Mr. Fardanesh?
Here.
Mr. Robert?
Here.
Mr. Burbo?
Here.
Ms. Edwards? Not present. Ms. Moreno?
Moreno, yes, here. Thank you.
Ms. Marks?
Here.
Mr. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Newton? Thank you.
Yeah, we do. Looks like we have a quorum, so we could go ahead and continue. All right, please rise for a Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please have a seat. Okay, great. So we are going to go ahead and go to a closed session, but before we go to a closed session, is there any public comment on those items? Ms. Tacker, please.
Good afternoon. I am Julie.
There's the button. Julie Tacker. Hey, you have on this agenda general public comment is identified first, then you have closed session. You've just asked for closed session comments. Will you have another opportunity for general public comment? Okay. Speaking to the conference with labor negotiators, and I see later in the agenda you'll be adopting a relationship with the union. And what I wanted to underscore is that this has gone on for many months, and it started under your previous executive director. And my concern is the great cost that it comes to the agency. I have seen this happen in other agencies, and then it's, once you've got a union, it's very difficult to ever get rid of it. And then labor negotiations and the attorneys are involved and the cost goes on. And then quickly to the real property at 870, I believe that by now there's been an appraisal. And to my knowledge, that is not available to the public yet, and I would like that it be available as soon as possible. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Wonderful. Okay, so we'll go ahead and council, please announce the items, please.
We'll be going into closed session under Government Code Section 54957.6. Regarding conference with labor negotiators, I'll be representing the the IWMA. We will also be conferencing with real property negotiators under Government Code Section 54956.8, and I will be the representative discussing that with the board.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll go ahead to a closed session now. Thank you.
Okay, we're reporting out of closed session. On the conference with labor negotiators, you'll see an item at 15, and the board will take up the action at item 15 regarding that closed session matter. On item 5, there is no reportable action on the real property negotiations.
Great, thank you. Let's go ahead to general public comment period. Also, we'll have a comment period for each item as we discuss it. So it's up to you, whatever, if you want to have some comment now.
Good afternoon again, Julie Tacker. And I wanted to speak to today's agenda. I think there's some problems. On your website on Friday, was one agenda. On Saturday at 1:53 in the afternoon, I received a different agenda. And when you lay them side by side, there's the closed session was at the end. There's items been renamed and renumbered. So the two of those, in the email that I got, the agenda packet on Saturday, it says that it's the meeting of September 10th. And so when I wanted to verify the confusion in my own mind, Monday morning I came here to the government center to see if it was posted, that it would be here. It is not posted out front. It is posted inside. And on Monday, it was the Friday agenda. 72-hour notice is Sunday at 1:30. So Monday morning, it was still Friday's agenda. That's problematic. And if I was, I don't want to file a cure and correct for this meeting, but it was improperly noticed, and there's clearly confusion around it. So I'm just going to put that out there, and you decide if you want to proceed. But I'm afraid someone else could ask for a cure and correct because it was improperly noticed. I will have some other comments on other items on this agenda, but there's basically two agendas in play for those who looked at it. So I'll be back.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Quick, just moving forward, we should have the time going on public comment just for the rest of the public comment. We didn't have that going, the timer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you wish to proceed? I believe the corrected agenda was posted at the IWMA office. And there was a corrected agenda posted, just not in front here. So do you want to proceed or?
Not Monday morning.
The correct agenda is the agenda that's before you that was on the website that was emailed to all interested parties and was posted at the IWMA office.
Okay.
Is there an issue of materiality in the sense of, if there's an erroneous date or something listed that, I don't know what changed. But
there were corrections, but there was not material correction.
Okay. I assume there's an issue of, or that there's a precedence regarding the materiality of changes and whether or not that affects, the validity of an agenda, of a published agenda.
Yeah, my opinion is that it's sufficient notice, but I do agree that there are inconsistencies and it should have been posted here also.
Okay.
I just like to say that to me it has to do with attention to detail and proofreading. So my suggestion would be that there be at least two sets of eyes on everything before it goes out rather than just one person. I was confused as well with September 10th. I went, wait a minute. Okay, time is weird right now. How can it be November, but it's not September? So then I was thinking, well, what's this about? So I was emailing and trying to figure it all out. And this is someone who's been on the board for a long time. And I think the general public is less diligent and sharp-eyed than Ms. Tacker. However, we need to eliminate any possible confusion, especially on a level that is so basic, which is just having everything read by at least two people. You can pick whoever you think would be good. That's my two cents.
I mean, I'm very concerned about, like you said, attention to detail. You know, you shouldn't have something going out with the wrong date on it. And if we're changing the, you know, the wording around the title of agenda items or something like that, I hope that's, and I'll take counsel's opinion on it, that it's not material, but it shouldn't happen. And we just flat out need to do a better job on that. And, but the real question for me is it, did it materially impact anybody's ability to be aware there was a meeting and that these are the items to be discussed? And that's why I look to counsel for that opinion.
Yeah, so my opinion stands.
Okay. Then for me, then I, you know, say we, you know, we go with the counsel's opinion, and we just make damn sure that, you know, things get out and are posted accurately and on a timely basis.
That'll do.
All right, do we need a motion or just consensus? Okay, so do we have consensus to move forward? Okay, but to be accurate.
You know, I thank the member of the public for pointing that out.
Yeah, thank you, appreciate it. We'll promise to do better. Okay, Executive Director's report.
Thank you. I have a few items to provide briefings to you about this morning, this afternoon. The first is regarding staffing updates. So I'm pleased to report that our new Deputy Director, Lucy Stannis, will be joining the IWMA on December 1st. Finally have a full roster at the IWMA for our staff, and will be really helpful in making sure that we're keeping up to date on all of our responsibilities and minimizing errors going forward. To support our workload, at least for the end of the year, I've also brought on Kendra Foley as a part-time temporary administrative staff. She's currently assisting the IWMA in managing our local assistance grant program, and she'll help us to tackle other projects that have been placed on the back burner due to workload. A few other updates. I'm very pleased about the third annual Solid Waste Summit that was held last week in Atascadero. It was a major success with over 80 attendees and a lot of very positive feedback from participants. We had really good feedback on the presentations and discussions. The recording is now posted on our website for anybody that wasn't able to attend and is interested in seeing the information. I'm making several changes to our internal operations to improve effectiveness and oversight and reducing opportunities for errors to be introduced. That includes shifting our retirement accounts from for the 401A and 457 plans from Nationwide to John Hancock. This will also result in lower fees both for the IWMA and to their employees, and it should provide better service and direct payments connected to our verified payroll. They'll reduce delays and errors that we've seen in the past. I'm activating a new HR module that's part of our contract for a timesheet and payroll system. It'll provide new functionality to help us track employee mandatory trainings. It'll streamline benefits administration. It'll create an integrated portal for employee performance management and ensure that employee compensation aligns with the approved salary steps that this board has approved. So again, that will reduce potential for errors and issues and also improve the performance of our internal HR processes. This functionality has a one-time setup cost of $1,050 and a monthly cost of $250. So I'm making sure the board is aware that'll be reflected in IWMA's services and supplies budget going forward. But it is within my approval authority for changes to our contracts. I'm also continuing to make improvements to our external contracts. That's based on feedback and recommendations that we've been getting from our partners and our customers. The biggest change is to our HHW collection contract. We're making updates to the rates charged to businesses to ensure that there's full cost recovery for the IWMA's cost for managing business waste. We've also enhanced operations so that e-waste will be a lot easier for particularly the three household hazardous waste collection sites at our landfills, and we're continuing to investigate options for improving the ability for other agencies to use our contracts to manage HHW that other public agencies are collecting as part of their routine operations. And I'll have specific recommendations for the board early in the new year to update our contract for that. Next week, we're also excited to host CalRecycle's local assistance and market development branch representatives. These are the staff that support all of our implementation of AB 939, SB 1383, and other statewide requirements and policies related to waste reduction that CalRecycle is responsible for. Their goal is to visit all 20 of our member agencies, and my staff has been diligently setting up site visits throughout the week, and I'll be joining them so that I have an opportunity to meet with staff from all the member agencies and special districts as well. Be a good opportunity to reconnect with folks that I met when I first joined the agency and also touch base and make sure that they're getting good support and understand the process for CalRecycle's oversight and audits as they move forward in reviewing, especially our SB 1383 compliance. And then two other quick updates. At the last board meeting, there's a question about the technical assistance grant program. And I want to confirm that this was, in fact, an optional program when it was first established in 1996. I also wanted to make the board aware that we just applied for the statewide beverage container recycling grant program that provides approximately $70,000. It's a non-competitive funding program that directly goes to jurisdictions. And some of the items specifically supported by the grant are water refill stations and public recycling bins. So we're reaching out to the cities and member agencies to see if there are specific projects that they have an interest in using those grant funds to support. And so in the past, we've used it just for a general outreach related to increasing beverage container recycling. But we also have this opportunity to apply specifically to investments for infrastructure locally. And we're looking forward to do that based on feedback that we get from our member agencies. And then lastly, I'm pleased to report on the success of our pilot Trash to Treasure program. This is something that we implemented in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And we had very limited outreach to see if there is interest and had really overwhelming support. It was one of our highest visited sites. We had nearly 50 items posted, even though we only had a short window for residents to post them, and six items that were claimed prior to being set out for collection as part of the cleanup week. And so we expect, based on the comments that we got, that there's interest in expanding that program more widely. We're looking in the spring to roll out this pilot program throughout the county. So we'll be reaching out to your staff as well to talk about how to do that so that it's tailored to each jurisdiction. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions on the executive report? So I'll just, my apologies for being so late here. I honestly had the wrong day. So thank you for calling me. So let's move on then to item eight, which is a presentation by
Julie Tacker, and it's really just one topic. I'd like to know if there's an update on the ramp for 555 Choro. You'll recall that the lift there does not work and had a couple of Brown Act violations related to having meetings there. Because there was no public access for ADA compliance. So I'm eager to know what the progress is. I have spoken directly to Mr. Sky about his dream of putting in a ramp. So what's up with that?
So just to clarify, the lift at 555 Choro is operational. We're able to have Brown Act compliant meetings there, and we plan to have our executive committee meetings there going forward. I'm still getting estimates for a ramp. We'll consider that as a backup in case we have future issues with the lift, but there's no decision that's been made as to date on a ramp.
Any other public comment on the executive director's report? Okay, with that, we'll move on to a presentation from SLO Food Bank.
Hello, Chair and Board members. I'm really grateful to be here with you today. I think we've got some slides that hopefully you can each see on your screens. I'm Molly Kern, with CEO of the Slow Food Bank, and one of our most treasured relationships here in the community is with all of you here at the IWMA. Not only supports a truly incredible food recovery program, but really is a great opportunity for us to connect with so many food producers and donors throughout our community. So before we get started on the nuts and bolts of it, there we go. I was hoping you can move to the next slide, please. I can just talk also, we're good. Wanted to just share a little bit about what we're seeing in our community. Food insecurity is prevalent, though sometimes it's hard to know if the person that you are working with maybe is a friend of your child's at school or is even packing your own groceries, is experiencing food insecurity themselves. But locally, we see that about 31% of households don't earn enough to afford their basic necessities, and that includes childcare, gas, housing. And we really see that children and older adults and seniors are the lion's share of the people that we serve here at the Slow Food Bank. And it also has been the lion's share of additional need that we've seen over these past 12 days when people haven't been getting their CalFresh benefits. So certainly have seen and heard so many additional inquiries from seniors in particular who are struggling to get the food that they need to stay healthy and vibrant. And so we're really honored. We've been serving hundreds, if not thousands, of more people every single week since the end of October. And our food rescue program has been a really essential way that we've been able to meet this need. And so just grateful for all of you and wanted to share a little bit of that. As we go to the next slide, you can see we are also countywide. We get to work in every single one of your jurisdictions to support our neighbors who are facing hunger, whether that's through the more than 70 other nonprofits whose pantries, meal sites, and homes we stock with nutritious groceries, or through our neighborhood food distributions that help make up that patchwork so that people have a convenient place to get the food that they need. We also are incredibly honored, again, to really have extra service to our seniors and children locally with breakfast bags during the summer months when schools aren't open for families and children to get additional food, as well as our monthly children and senior farmers markets, which have an opportunity to not only get fresh produce that's often locally grown into the hands of our most vulnerable neighbors, but also to really build community, have that interaction, do nutrition education, and really have an opportunity for that extra power of food to not only nourish people's bodies, but also to create connection and build real community is an amazing space there. So as we go to the next slide, just wanted to remind you of some of the things that we've been doing over the past year together in true partnership with the IWMA. We serve more than 4 million meals to our neighbors, again, all across Slough County, lots of different ways to meet people where they are. And right now that's looking like we're serving more than 45,000 different people a month. And I'll say this was before October, so it's definitely gone up. But those are people who are working so hard in our communities, who are learning, who have built our community and are now in their sort of senior years. But we're so honored to be part of their lives every single week. And as you saw, we're trying to be everywhere that our community is to make it as convenient as possible. So that means 130 locations also support us in lending their parking lots and opening up their churches, their community centers, lots of different things. And so we really couldn't do this alone and are just so grateful to be this community's food bank. So with that, I'm going to turn over to my colleague who's going to give you some more information about our actual food rescue program and the real tactical ways that we work with the IWMA every day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Molly, for that great intro about our countywide impact. My name is Sarah Frimsis. I'm the food rescue manager, and I'm really looking forward to sharing how we procure the food that nourishes our neighbors. Thank you. So at the food bank, we leverage our wholesale purchasing power to buy food in bulk at reduced rates, really stretching every dollar to go further. Through these efforts, we're proud to regularly provide fresh milk, eggs, and produce to our community. Purchasing food also allows us to serve with dignity. It ensures that, you know, the food we distribute is fresh and high quality with a really long shelf life, that it reflects community preferences, and it comes in uniform cased quantities that make planning and distribution more efficient. And thanks to our purchasing power, every donation goes even further. We can buy twice as many frozen holiday proteins like turkeys, or more than four times as much peanut butter as you could just at a grocery store. And then we're also lucky to participate in the Emergency Food Assistance Program through the USDA in partnership with the California Department of Social Services to receive free federal food commodities, including frozen protein, fresh produce, and shelf-stable basics. And then as you can see on this graph, community support does account for the smallest percentage of the food we distribute. We really do encourage people to donate funds instead of food, as it allows us to purchase more of the food that we know our community actually needs. And we can turn one donated dollar into four nutritious meals. And then last, but definitely not least, 39% of the food in the last fiscal year came from Food Rescue, where our network of partners rescued edible food that otherwise would have gone to waste. We can go to the next slide. So we'll take a little closer look at our two food rescue programs, GLEAN and Agency Direct Rescue, which together diverted over 2 million pounds of food last year, and how we get that food to neighbors in need. We're extremely proud of the work we do to reduce food waste and get it to those experiencing food insecurity. It really is a huge step in the direction of sustainability and is the key to adequately feeding generations to come. So first up is our GLEAN program, which organizes volunteers to harvest produce from farms, orchards, backyards, and farmers markets all around the county. You know, we live in such an abundant region, it's really heartbreaking that so many of our neighbors don't have access to this fresh produce, and we're really proud to help change that. And beyond feeding people, the GLEAN program builds community, it connects volunteers to our food system, and it also supports our local farmers by helping them save on labor costs and providing an outlet for their excess produce. And all of our donations are tax deductible. And last year, we rescued over 290,000 pounds of produce and celebrated our 3 million pound milestone. And then our other program is Agency Direct Rescue, which coordinates our agency partners to collect excess edible food from grocery stores, school districts, and other food service providers, reducing waste at the commercial level. And with nearly one-third of our agencies participating, we rescue donations 7 days a week. Volunteers bring those donations directly to their organizations for quick distribution, providing nutritious meals while reducing food miles and minimizing food safety risks. And then this program also helps our food generators comply with SB 1383. And we can go to the next slide. So we'll take a closer look at our Agency Direct Rescue program, which really is the source of most of the rescued food that makes its way through our network, to the tune of over 1.7 million pounds last year alone. So coordinated by our staff, the majority of rescue activities are performed by our agency partners. And there's a lot of benefits for agencies and donors participating, and so we can get into it. So the first is that we're getting food to our neighbors quickly and safely. By empowering our agencies to perform direct pickups from grocery stores and schools, they can bring donations straight to their organizations for faster, fresher distribution. This system helps maintain the cold chain and keeps nutritious food safe while it quickly makes its way to our community. And then secondly, these agencies gain greater access to free nutritious food, sometimes getting 500 to 1,000 pounds per food at each pickup, which really helps them meet the rising community needs that all of our agencies are seeing. And all the food they receive comes at no cost, aside from the time and equipment needed for pickup and reporting. And then also these agencies have an increased access to a greater variety of foods. So, for example, our operations at our warehouse don't really make it feasible to deal with, like, prepared foods, like ready-to-eat or, you know, grab-and-go meals. But if one of our agencies was interested in those items and had capacity to safely distribute it, we could link them up with a grocery store or a school that may have excess product to donate. And then along those lines, another great benefit is that a lot of the donated products are familiar brands to our clients, which can just create a sense of dignity and feeling less othered when picking up food from one of our partners. You know, they can pack their kiddos lunch and not worry about anything feeling different. And then just another obvious value is reducing unnecessary food waste. We live in a county with so much available food, it only makes sense to actively get that food to those experiencing food insecurity. By doing so, the program not only feeds people, but also cuts greenhouse gas emissions. And then our program also supports our local donors by providing them an outlet for their excess food, which can decrease their own waste fees. They get an enhanced tax deduction, and it fulfills the reporting requirements to comply with SB 1383, since we require all of our agencies to report their rescue poundage weekly. And next slide. All right, and so here we have a visualization of the flow of data So after our agencies report their weekly poundage to us, our staff compiles those reports and sends them off to the IWMA, who sends that off to CalRecycle, which helps ensure that the state is getting accurate information about our county's efforts to reduce edible food waste, and to ensure that the donors are getting are in compliance with the state bill. And then also, as a member food bank of Feeding America, which is a national association of food banks, we also send them a monthly report, who in turn reports to the corporate entities of our local stores. This ensures that our local donors are getting the credit for their impactful donations. And next slide. All right, and so here we have a graph showing our program participation since 2021. And as you can see, we are on an upward trajectory of growth, which has just been really valuable, really great source of food for our community. And then just an interesting note that I want to point out is our donor participation doubled in 2022 when those Tier 1 generators were mandated to donate, and we were able to onboard some more agencies into the program. And we work with over 40 donors and over 25 agencies. And next slide. All right, and so now we can look at the impact that this program has had in the community through the pounds rescued and the meals provided. As you can see, I feel like it really shows it on this graph, just how much our program has been growing. And again, it's just an incredible source of food for our community, with last year bringing in over 1.7 million pounds and nearly 1.5 meals provided. And we don't have the numbers for this fiscal year, but we are already seeing an increase, which is just really incredible. And then a data point that I want to mention on this graph is just the overall growth that we saw the last fiscal year or two. So at the end of 2023, we created a pilot program with San Luis Coastal Unified School District to kind of help prepare for those 2024 mandates. And in their first year, they donated over 20,000 pounds of edible food. And we were able to build on that successful program and onboard Lucia Mar Unified. And their program really started picking up this past spring. And they've already donated over 7,000 pounds of food. And then we just recently onboarded the Paso School District, and we're really looking forward to seeing how their program grows. And then, yeah, I just want to say again that this has been an absolutely valuable, incredible source of food that's been instrumental in increasing our capacity to meet our community's growing needs. We are so grateful for the partnerships we've cultivated with our generous donors, and are really proud of the work that we've done to safely divert millions of pounds of edible food to equitably feed our community. And next slide. Oh, does it end there, perhaps? That's all good. I can just chat. So I just wanted to make a point about serving with dignity. The entire team at the Slo Food Bank works really hard to ensure that all of our programs, including Agency Direct Rescue, serve with dignity. And part of that entails consistency, equitable access, safe food handling, and ongoing support to help our partners maintain these practices. So by providing schedules and clear communications, we support strong, functional partnerships between our participants. It creates stability for the program and certainty for clients when accessing food from our partners. We work really hard to ensure that the flow of food is never interrupted. And we also make sure that all the rescued food is distributed equitably, at no cost, and without access barriers. It is absolutely vital that this food reaches those who need it, and our team makes sure that our partners share the same commitment. And then a huge focus for us, and really a leading part of serving with dignity, is following food safety standards. We train each of our agencies on safe food handling, empowering them to know that the food they rescue is safe to share with their clients. We provide the necessary equipment to safely rescue and transport food, and we have a protocol for sharing product recall notices throughout our network. And we just really try to prioritize our partners' understanding of the importance of food safety when serving the public, and you know, the reasoning behind having food safety standards. Since food insecurity is an intersectional issue, a lot of folks who struggle to get enough food also don't have great access to medical care. And it is really our responsibility as hunger relief organizations to provide safe, responsibly handled food to our community. It's really important that folks know that they can trust that the quality will always stay the same and that the food will be safe to share with their families. And then we perform annual site visits and just continuous support drop-ins with our agencies and donors, just to ensure that things are running smoothly on both ends, that food is being distributed equitably, and that food safety practices are being followed from the store until it makes its way to someone's plate. And then just as we wrap up our presentation, we just wanted to take a moment to say a heartfelt thank you to our friends at the IWMA for your ongoing partnership and support. We're so grateful to collaborate on reducing waste and alleviating hunger, and especially for your help securing the grant that will fund equipment to grow our community's food rescue capacity. Our food rescue programs play a vital role in feeding our neighbors, with agencies serving more than half of the people we reach each month. And so this grant will really help strengthen that work by increasing safe food storage and temperature control across the whole network. And really, expanding capacity means that we can continue serving more people safely and with dignity. And thanks to partnerships like the ones that we share with the IWMA, the Slo Food Bank is privileged to continue feeding Slo County. Thank you.
So any questions or comments on the presentation? And then I'll go to public comment after that. Go ahead, Jen.
Mayor John. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm I don't know if you'll have an answer for this, but we're all aware of the SNAP program, the food stamps, as we used to call it, kind of people being whipsawed away. It's like, oh, do I have benefits? Or I had them in October, but I don't know about November. And so now we're November 12th. And I know this really affects the food bank because you guys are the default if people can't get their SNAP. So do you have any comment on how it's affected the food bank on what the heck is going on? I would really appreciate it.
Yeah, so we were notified along with really everyone else on October 24th that benefits would be delayed for the month of November. And we immediately went to work getting more food out to each of our partners and also to all of our neighborhood food distributions. A great example is we served nearly 450 people in just under 2 hours last night in Pomo, and served a record number of people also earlier last week up in Heritage Ranch. So it's every single part of our community where people are turning to the food bank for the first time. In Slo County, there's just under 30,000 people that receive CalFresh benefits every month. And I'll also say that that's compounded. We also have a couple hundred federal workers who are not getting their paychecks right now also. And so we are also really honored to be supporting them at this time. And have been really grateful that the community stepped up. In addition to seeing a record number of people at our distributions, we are seeing a record number of volunteers and donors and community really just leaning in to support their neighbors. So it's definitely been really, really challenging, but also really heartening to see this community step up. As of late last week, we were hearing that people are getting their benefits, though there is still a lot of concern and confusion. I was working in our pantry yesterday, and people were saying, hey, I have my benefits, but I'm not sure if I'm going to have to pay them back. You know, there's a lot going on. It's hard, I think, for anyone to navigate it, let alone someone who's at the same time trying to feed themselves and their families. And so I think things are looking like they will be coming to conclusion this evening with the House of Representatives and the president, and hopefully there will be some more clarity after that. But I think the level of uncertainty has really been overwhelming for so many people in our community recently. Yeah, but we get to say yes because of this community. We know that other food banks across the nation are empty, that they don't have the volunteers they need, where they are really scrapping to make even some food available to their community. And we have been able to say yes to every single person who has turned to us, many for the first time. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Guthrie. I just wanted to say thank you. You guys, I saw your presentation at the summit, and again, without your organization and what you do for the county, it's be a lot of people out there that would be a lot worse off. So I just want to compliment you on your services and thank you for being there. Okay.
And with that, I'll ask for public comment on this item. Seeing none, I guess I should leave that on. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Do we have any public comment on the consent agenda?
Julie Tacker. First to item 9, the executive committee minutes. I think they're already approved, but your board packet doesn't have the signed version. Also, I think the website needs to be updated on some of the minute minutes being posted to the monthly financial reports. And as an aside, I have been looking for an RFP for a new bookkeeper. Wonder when that, if I missed it or when it's coming. Can I just say late fee, 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 late fee. Waste Management, the gas company, Slo City Water, and Marburg all have late fees in your packet. All, except for maybe one, under the time that Peter Cron was your executive director. What was missing this year in your financials all since January have been the nationwide invoices and the expenditures. I did see that up until all this year, January through now. This is the first time you see it. And that was a discussion you had at your last meeting where the nationwide numbers weren't being presented fully, I'll say. So I did a public records request for the nationwide expenses from actually December, I think, through my request, which was October, so probably through September. And it took about 3 weeks to get a copy, to get the all the purchase orders and invoices, et cetera. And we hope, as activists and interested public, that we get our documents within 10 days. This took longer. They're not the Epstein files. So I'm glad I got them, and I think you need to see the January through June, or before this packet, because this is, I've already forgotten, July, August, and September. So June, January through June, December of last year was never given to you also. So you need to have all of that come through to make up. Again, under Mr. Cron's leadership. Those are my notes. Thank you.
All right. With that, I'll move into any questions on the consent agenda.
Yes, I had a couple of questions on the financials as well. I did note for a couple months running, there are the late fees. They're insignificant from a dollar amount perspective, but it does cause the concern, of course, that we should have any late fees at all. I mean, they're $1.63, $3.29, et cetera. So they're not of concern from a dollar standpoint, but from a process standpoint as to why that happens and have we taken action to ensure it doesn't. And I believe you've had an opportunity to look at that now. So do you?
Yes, I wanted to speak to a few items. So the late fees is one. I definitely wanted to draw the board's attention to those. I've asked staff to track any bills that have been delinquent and to note. You'll see some of those going back to February. There's several reasons for that. One is change in staffing. So the people processing the invoices have changed several times in the past 12 months. The other is a change in address. Several agencies just did not update their records or sending it to the wrong place by the time they were transferred and got to our new office location. There was already a late fee imposed by the time we were processing it. We're working to get any of those fees that can be waived to be waived and to implement new processes so that we have a standardized process. And I really appreciate staff that are quickly learning our accounting practices and making sure that we eliminate late fees going forward. And that is my intent. So my strong hope and expectation is that this will be one of, if not the last time you'll see late fees on the monthly financials.
Okay, thank you. The other question is regards revenues.
Yes.
We, on the revenue side, we have a month where we have substantial IWMA solid waste management fee revenue and very little tipping fee revenue. And then a different, the next month's financial report is kind of the reverse. And I thought that we do get both of those revenue streams monthly, so I thought there'd be at least somewhat consistency that, like, the solid waste management fee in particular would be several hundred thousand dollars per month. But it seemed, like I said, that it jumped around where one was almost non-existent one month, then large the next month, and vice versa. Is there a particular operational reason or timing reason for that?
The primary reason was the implementation of the new fee structure. So you may recall, effective July 1st, there were four different potential rates, depending on whether an area was exempt from SB 1383 or not, and whether it was a residential or commercial customer. And implementing those throughout the county for all the different jurisdictions was definitely a challenge. Some of the invoices that we received were overpayments. They hadn't reflected the new rate structure or were not clear in that they were charging customers correctly. And so, again, my staff worked very closely with the waste haulers to make sure that we got updated records. So by the time some of the correct invoices came in, it was into the next month. So you definitely see a very significant drop in revenue in August compared to September. In future months, you'll see the number in between those two rates, because there was an over-collection in September that should have actually been in the August revenue.
Okay, thank you. And last question, you mentioned, I believe, in the executive director's report, switching from Nationwide to, I forget what you said.
John Hancock.
And I understand, you know, there's some reasons for that, but I'm curious, though, what impact that has on employees. Are the balances transferred over to John Hancock to a comparable program? I mean, if this person selected, you know, I don't know, Atlas 500 something fund, you know, then John Hancock certainly has a similar fund, and we transfer it over, so the employees don't have to now be getting two statements every quarter from two different providers, et cetera?
That is correct. And so, for the most part, John Hancock has the exact same funds. In a few cases, they have a very comparable fund that the current balances will be transferred over to the John Hancock equivalent fund.
Because I know people in, you know, who stayed with the same employer for many years and have three or four accounts with different, tax-deferred providers. So, okay, thank you.
Yeah, there'll actually be fewer accounts because Nationwide has a different portal for both employees and for myself as a manager to log in for the 401A versus the 457. There'll now be a combined portal with John Hancock, only one portal for both accounts, so it'll actually streamline it even more for both employees and for me.
Okay, thanks.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, I had a question. First of all, I want to say I think it's really important for staff to have professional development opportunities. And so my question is kind of a request, is that if there is a conference coming up like the CRRA conference, for instance, that the board be given a sense of what was involved with that. I'm not saying that we would need necessarily a report, but if something interesting ideas came up, or just to know the agendas, like what is this conference all about? I'm also concerned that the, I guess I don't understand why the hotel charges at the Stratham Hotel were canceled and then started up again in July and then again in September in two different hotels. So I'm just in terms of the whole professional development thing, I think it would be good for the board to really have a clear sense of what's going on in that regard. Also about, now of course I've lost the reference, but there was about $2,000 in a cancellation of airfare that was listed here.
Jan, I've got one of those. It's on page, well, you're probably looking, page 34 of the agenda.
Thank you. I circled it and then lost it. Yeah, there you go. Hey, that's good. Thanks. Well, maybe you can take it from here. So that's those are my questions. It's just like I said, it's really important. Professional development is really important, and I know it has a great return for the organization and for the whole county and for the important work that the IWMA does. But I think staff needs to just be brought up to speed about what's going on when that happens, and also just making sure that the finances are really transparent. So.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Yeah, so that just at page 34, it looks like, you know, over $1,200 just for a flight cancellation, but I'm hoping that was the change plus the flight and other things because...
It was indeed both the airline flight and the change fee because there was a cancellation just before the flight. And as you can imagine, there's been a lot of issues more recently with flights, but that was a last-minute change to the flight that created an extra fee.
Was that created by us, though? Because that's how you get a fee, as if we're the ones creating that change.
I think it was the only flight available, and essentially it was either canceling the flight, which meant the employee wouldn't be able to travel, or paying the extra fee to get them there close enough that they could still attend the conference.
Got it. One other question was on the legal fees. So looking between basically June and July, you know, 12,000 one month, 16,000 the other, what tends to be our typical, is that average or was that higher than usual because of negotiations, or is that our standard, you know, 14,000 plus or minus?
I'll ask Linda to weigh in on that. I do know there was some additional work related to my coming on board, the negotiations and other activities.
Yeah, and I don't know because I don't have the particular month's invoices, but I do know that the fees increased because the external investigator was hired through our firm. So that bill was paid by our firm. So it represents a third party cost that just appears on our bill. So I know that was for at least 2 months. You know, so I believe that bills are around 12. But that's just going off my memory of average.
Okay. Jen, did I answer your question regarding Mr. Statham's hotel costs? Those were credited because he was scheduled to participate in the conference but ended up not participating. So that's why there was a credit for that hotel.
Yeah. I just... I don't know how to put this, but hotels are really expensive. You know, it's like there needs to be some kind of return on investment in terms of the general public and the board and the operation, just so that we know what we get out of it. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Where was that conference, by the way? Where was that located, that NAMBA?
In Monterey.
Monterey?
Are you talking about the flight or the conference that Jen was talking about?
The conference itself that's addressing this particular airline?
Oh, the flight was to Chicago.
Chicago, okay.
So let me go back and let John...
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks, Jen.
And then I did want to give Navita a shot here.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yes, just on the financials, it's really troubling to see all the late fees, and I'm glad to see that you're putting steps on this, working to eliminate those. My next item was a question. Well, I had a question regarding, I guess it's called the NAHMA, conference. I would like to learn a little bit more about that as well, what that was about. But on that, I believe that's where it was the $282 cancellation and itinerary change for the flight. The flight itself looks like $962, and then plus the hotel costs and everything. So that comes to like $2,500. So it would be nice to know what happens, but also hopefully we could eliminate the cancellations and itinerary changes. My other question is that with Science Discovery, I've noticed that we're paying for mileage reimbursement to them, as well as a cell phone, I assume, is Spectrum. Is that part of the contract?
Yes, it is.
Okay, is that, I mean, well, I guess it's confusing if they're a third party and they are, you know, they're getting paid for the, you know, the contract, then why are we paying additional for mileage reimbursement and cell phone, things like that? And is that cell phone only used for IWMA?
So the way the contract was structured is that we're reimbursing them for mileage for trips that are specifically for activities related to the IWMA. So if we have them conduct site visits to businesses or other attending events, that they would submit the mileage for that particular rate. We also pay them for the time for the employees, but that's a separate cost. And I think it was structured that way to just, otherwise it would be embedded in their overhead.
Yeah.
And so this was a way to lower the overhead and pay directly for some of those specific costs. So the cell phones are another item that was included in the contract for the IWMA to reimburse.
Okay, all right. And then, I guess I requested during our executive committee requested the breakdown on nationwide. I thought it was going to be on this agenda, but I assume that you couldn't.
We are putting that together, and we'll share it with the full board, and we'll also make it available on the website.
It would be on the next agenda. Okay. All right. And then just one more question. For the NAHMA conference, how many staff members attended that?
Just one.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it. Thank you very much.
Let me go back to Charles. Did you have an additional comment? And John,
you're good.
Is your light still on? So.
Oops. Sorry.
So with that, I'll move approval of the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Charles was a local. So let's have roll call, please.
Mr. Fardanish?
Aye.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
And Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. And with that, we'll move on to... Oh, protocol. So... Those of you who were at the last meeting, I went over this a little bit there. I'm finding it a little difficult to handle this big a committee. That's why I'm sitting at this end where I can see everybody. So what I'd like to set up is that when we're making our comments, what happens is it's good to have back and forth, but we end up not everybody gets to participate. So the way I'd like to set this up is we'll go ahead and do comments and questions at the same time, because everybody does that anyway. But I'll start at one end and just go person by person to the other end, and then the next time go person by person back. And then I'll open it up for the... So I know everybody wants to jump in because they want to ask a question about a specific comment. But I think if you'll wait, then I'll certainly open up to a more collegial discussion afterward. But I am trying to get everybody an opportunity to participate and when people are talking and I'm looking the other way, it's difficult for me. So I want to give that a shot. I'll also, I always feel like it might go just a little bit quicker. The things that I believe they're that we all agree on, consensus on, that I'm just going to go ahead and move approval. And I think that'll be a little bit quicker than everybody looking around and trying to decide who's going to do it. We do have a lot simpler here where we can just say staff recommendation. But I just try to... get the meeting to move along a little bit quicker. So I'll open it up here to comments on that. Yes.
Yeah, I really respect that, and I think that's an excellent idea. I would also recommend, because I've been guilty of this myself, is sometimes we're asking some really small, minor questions up here that, I mean, I have a 3:30 appointment because our agenda says 1:30 to 3:30, and we're clearly not going to be done in 43 minutes, and I will be leaving before then. So, and everybody else has schedules as well. And I think ahead of time, we can be, emailing Kobe some of those questions and making sure we get those answered ahead of time, or if necessary, having... appointments with him, especially when it's a big item or something, so that we don't spend so much time on really minor things.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And with that, I'll open it up to the public for any public comment on this.
Just clarify, when were you thinking of going to a public comment? I know you said about at one point.
Generally, I'll be going to public comment as soon as the staff presentation is over.
Okay, public comment.
I'd love to have us ask questions and then go to public comment and then come back but it never works out that way here. So we'll do questions and comments together. And then, of course, any comments after public comment are certainly appropriate as well. Okay. All right, so with that, we'll move on to item 13, which is a review of the anaerobic digester facility.
So anytime there's an update to the non-disposal facility element, this board, as the Integrated Waste Task Force, is supposed to be apprised of that. So this item is to make you aware that Slo County, on behalf of the Canadevia Nova anaerobic digestion facility, submitted a non-disposal facility element update to the state. It's for a 1,500 square foot expansion of the existing facility, and it's to help them implement a food depackaging equipment on site to make their operation a little bit more efficient. There's no vote on this item, but it is for your information, and representatives of both the county and the facility are present if there are any questions from the board.
Okay, so with that, I'll start on this. And any questions, Robert? Jan?
Yeah, I was a little confused at the summit, the solid waste summit, when the waste management people were talking about taking organic matter up to their up to Paso, and I thought everything went to the biodigester.
So I can have Tom respond to that question. I would just generally say most of the organic waste, especially from South County, is going to the digester, but it's not all of the county's waste.
It's not, but it says here that the participating jurisdictions are the unincorporated San Luis Obispo County and the Slo County IWMA member jurisdictions. But some of the organic waste is not going to the biodigester. I just want a little clarity in that.
Yeah, I wasn't at that summit, but I think it has related to the service territory of the individual waste haulers, probably. The majority of the waste that comes to us is waste connections service territory, and some jurisdictions such as Paso Robles, Templeton, and North County in general, that is serviced by different waste haulers that does not come to us, with the exception of, I think, one food waste load from Paso Robles.
Jan, waste management, you know, which does a Atascadero, it ends up out in Creston at Brad's ranch, you know, and turned in Brad Goodrow's ranch, and is turned into compost there. And that's been that way for years. Well, yeah, the Atascadero waste ending up out there has been that way for years.
Yeah, thank you for that, Mr. Rudo. John, any questions? And with that, I'll open it to the public. I actually already did that, didn't I? All right, so let's move on to item number 14, the discussion of the 23-24 audit and an update on the 24-25 audit.
Thank you. So on this item, I wanted to mention that at the September board meeting, there were a few questions that the board had presented. The first was a question about the 23-24 audit and if there was a communication with the board president before that had been concluded. I did connect with Brown and Armstrong, which is a previous firm that had completed that audit on our behalf. And they had some communications with the board, but not about the final draft of the audit. So we verified with Harshwall, who is our new audit firm, and they will have a lot more communication with the board president going forward. And they are on the line available to answer questions about the process for the 24-25 audit, which is already underway. So there's also a question about the uncorrected misstatements. And I had expressed my understanding that was referring to the description of certain items that were in the audit and the explanation attached to those misstatements that the previous executive director did not feel were accurately reflecting how those were categorized. And Alexa Hedder, who is our accountancy support contractor, is also available to answer questions about those items. So it was confirmed that it was an issue about the way those items were described in the audit, and the previous executive director did not agree with the way the auditor wanted to describe them. That's why those were listed as uncorrected uncorrected misstatements. And I am wanting to confirm that we are on schedule to complete the 24-25 audit. So most of the tasks associated with the data gathering are complete or well on their way, and we expect to have the completed draft by early next year. So we are definitely on schedule to present that to the board through that contract. So I'm happy to have questions to either Alexa, myself, or our 24-25 audit company. Do we have them on the line yet? Okay. Okay, great. And I see Alexa is on the line.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alexa, would you weigh in regarding specifically the uncorrected misstatements and explaining that terminology? Because you, when you see a term like that in an audit, it always can cause alarm.
Yeah, so there were two items that I worked with on the auditor on kind of getting correct from the previous year. There was like a balance adjustment made, and I had asked her what it was because they had done the audit multiple years in a row. And they were basically trying to match a balance on the books. And so I worked with her on getting that off so that I could reconcile the account in SAP. And then the other large item was just a depreciation calculation error. So the spreadsheet that I had received from the auditor, there was just a couple things on there that were not calculating correctly. And there were a couple assets that didn't have correct depreciable lives. So I did get those corrected and I resent them to the auditor and they did accept the change. So that was the other large adjustment. It wasn't anything necessarily material. It was just an update to the depreciation schedule that we had and a few of the assets on there and the calculation there.
Thank you.
I think this is a little out of order. Any questions here for staff? All right, with that, I'll open it to the public for public comment.
Julie Tacker again. I just want to say that I'm disappointed in how this item is being presented. I think a staff report with references to maybe page numbers in that audit and references to just what you said, I might not even have come today. Because I didn't know what the discussion was going to be. So that would have been helpful. I think we know that the 23-24 audit was a mess. And we can also assume the 24-25 audit will be another mess, maybe not as bad. But again, I want to remind you that it was under the leadership of Peter Cron.
Okay. And with that, I'll bring it back for any additional comments. Seeing none. And this is a receive and file.
Sorry, Chair.
I'm sorry.
I do agree because I was like, okay, well, we're just going to have an update. And so now I'm trying to remember what those things were, and I would have liked to have had those in front of me to refresh my memory, have that beforehand. So I do agree with that.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, and with that, we'll move on to item 15, Resolution number 2025-1101, a memorandum MOU between Integrated Waste Management Authority and the Service Employees Union. I have a staff report.
So the MOU before you was a result of months of negotiations led by myself and supported by our legal counsel and external counsel that specifically had experience in supporting public agencies through negotiations with union contracts. This was reflecting the priorities of the board as well as the requests from the employees. It is a five-year contract with an initial 5% cost of living adjustment. Future adjustments would be based on CPI. There are other provisions that reflect maintaining a lot of the benefits that have long been provided by the IWMA, and they'll be reflected in the MOU. We also made changes to the employee handbook to primarily reflect the updates in the MOU so that the employee handbook is consistent with it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
So any questions from the board or, okay. I do have a request to speak that I'll go to first here for Lauren Robinson.
Good afternoon, Chair and the Board. My name is Laura Robinson. I'm the Executive Director of SEIU Local 620. And I just want to take this opportunity to come here today and introduce myself. 620 is not unfamiliar to many of you. We represent almost every city in San Luis Obispo County. However, I did want to relay that we are under new leadership, we have a mostly new staff, and we have new member leaders, so the direction of 620 is changing. I truly want you guys to consider me as a labor partner moving forward, because that's how I consider the agencies that we work with. I wanted to thank you for working with us on getting this accomplished pretty efficiently, considering both 620 and your new executive director kind of came into this blind, unfamiliar with your policies and procedures and things of the sort. So I want to thank both Kobe and you guys for accomplishing that. And I think that the contract that we got is good. I think it will help with some of these retention issues that have clearly created some other issues in the past. I'm hoping those are no longer an issue going forward. And I just want to say that I'm here and available, and again, a labor partner. If you have any questions, not only at IWMA or the cities that you represent, I'm always available for a call. Thank you.
Julie Tacker again. The process that this has taken, this long road, I think it was February, that the employees reached out to the union under the leadership of Peter Cron. They didn't feel safe in their jobs. People had been fired. People left abruptly over the entire time he served as your executive director. There were troubles in a very small staff. You mentioned earlier that the staff changes led to late fees. There are many examples of where staff changes led to a very uncomfortable setting. The staff report under fiscal impact says NA. There has absolutely been a fiscal impact. I did reach out to Mr. Sky to try to get some of that quantified, and I hope he comes back with a number for all of you to see what this has cost this agency. And as I said in the very beginning at closed session, once you have a union, you will always have a union. And the costs will continue into the future because of the leadership of Mr. Peter Cron. I cannot emphasize that enough. That leadership harmed this agency and I'm glad it's over. But I want to see it fully over. And we'll talk about that in item 18.
Any other comments? Any other public comment? All right. All right, bring it back forward for discussion. And I'm ready for a motion, since I'm not sure about consensus on this one.
I'll make the motion to approve the resolution 2025-11-11-01, Memorandum of Understanding between IWMA and Service Employees International Union Local 620 for the period July 1st, 2025 through June 30th, 2030, and the revised employee handbook.
I'm happy to second that, and I want to thank Kobe. I know that was a lot for you to come in brand new to the agency and start in on that, so thank you for your heavy lift on the work and bringing us to this point.
Thank you.
Yes, and I'd like to just add to that, and I think this was a good process, and I appreciate the comments of the union organizer to that effect. And also, this is has been the subject matter of a closed session, so it may look to the viewing public like we're just going, oh, yeah. However, we have thoroughly considered every single item and gone over it with due diligence several times. So I feel quite comfortable with what we've come up with right now.
With that, we're ready for roll call.
Can I make one small request in the motion? On page 108, that's a summary of the benefits table, and I did notice that the sick leave to reflect the MOU should have been updated from 200 hours to 400 hours. If the board would accept incorporating that as an update in adopting the employee handbook, I would appreciate it.
108.
On page 108 of the packet, it's page 36 of the employee handbook.
Okay, I will go ahead and amend my motion to include the cap for the sick leave.
And the second
400 hours.
Thank you.
The second hold. That will go to roll call.
Mr. Fardanish?
Aye.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
All right. And I'm just going to take a second, since it's likely we'll go over. I just want to check in with the people who may be leaving at 3:30. If there's any item you'd like to move up on the agenda that you particularly wanted.
I would actually ask the director if there's anything in particular that you want to make sure
okay. We're
all of us here for. Let me look at the calendar we've kind of already talked about. No, I'm good, unless there's something you think.
No, I think the next item will be very quick, and so we should possibly even be able to get done by 3:30.
Great.
All right. With that, we'll move on to item 16, which is the IWMA calendar. Staff report here.
So the calendar in the attachment reflects the direction from the board as well as the revised MOU. So that's before you for adopting.
Question or comments from the board? Open it for public comment. Seeing none, we'll bring it back. I'll move approval of the IWMA calendar for 2026.
Move approval.
It was second. From Marino was a little quicker.
Mr. Fardanish?
Aye.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
With that, we'll move on to item 17, which is Science Discovery Outreach and Education Contract.
This item is move forward because of an upcoming sale of Science Discovery. Mike DiMello has been the long-standing owner of that company. It's a very important partner for the IWMA, helping us to ensure that all of our agencies are in compliance, particularly with SB 1383. It's been a really important partnership to ensure that we do outreach to our schools, outreach to our businesses and residents, and participate in a lot of community events. He's been working to facilitate the sale of the business to Nathan Capusta, and we want to make sure that we can continue working with Science Discovery as our partner and assign the two existing contracts that we have once a new owner takes over in the new year. And Mr. DeMello is here in the audience if you have any questions, and I'm relieved to report that he'll continue to be a part of Science Discovery even with the new owner taking on.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Director Guthrie, fellow IWB board members.
Is that better? Good afternoon, Director Guthrie, fellow IWB board members. I'm Mike DeMilo. I have not had the pleasure of meeting some of the newer board members. I've been around since 1996 running Science Discovery, and we have contracted with IWB in various fashions since then. And it occurred to me recently that I should probably spend more leisure time doing some other things and not be a workaholic as much. So I finally decided to turn over the keys to somebody else. However, I wanted the board to have confidence that there would be a very smooth transition in services. And in fact, I'm staying on as a part-time employee. And we have another employee who's been on the team for 18 years. And no other employees are leaving, so we're simply adding a new owner. So I feel like, in fact, we've been working for months on a new strategic plan for the next 3 to 5 years. So if anything, I feel like our position for IWMA and all our other clients, because we work for a whole number of other jurisdictions, will actually strengthen rather than lessen with my leaving full-time leadership of Science Discovery. One other thing before I forget, because it was interesting comment about our phone bill that Mr. Fardinesh asked. So all of the phones and four tablets, it's four phones and four tablets, are billed directly to IWMA because they are specific IWMA instruments. They're not our general work phones. And SB 1383 requires many, many site visits. I would say a couple of thousand a year, where we do what we call VIs, visual inspections, of trash containers and organics containers. And so all of those have to be done with communications with our clients. And there's very specific software that we have to use on the tablets. So each of our invoices include all 32 pages of the Verizon phone bill that go to you so that you can see exactly what we've done. Plus, every site visit and visual inspection is recorded in Smart 1383 so that you can see. So those instruments are only done for IWMA, and there's no cost plus billing. You just pay what's on the Verizon phone bill. So I hope that clarifies why that might seem like we're charging you for our regular business phones, and we're not. We have other phones for other clients and other uses. So with that, are there any questions that I can answer to help facilitate your confidence that we'll still do a great job for IWMA?
Just look back over here at the board. Seeing none, I'll open it up for public comment. Any public comment on this item?
John has a question. It's a. I'll just make a comment to Mike. Anything new that we should be expecting with your contract this year, Mike? I mean, something that we've not seen before.
Well, we've been spending our own funds and time on some new class presentations that we would bring to you, and if you like them, we would incorporate them in the school offerings. But we're doing that all on our own dime, so there's no risk to IWMA. And so we would present that to you sometime in the new year. But anything else new, I think just to improve our efficiency and do a great job, especially with SB 1383 compliance and our school education program, which is very active in the county. We visit every school in San Luis Obispo County.
Well, I think you make a big part of our educational part of the IWMA, which is really important, I think. So congratulations again on your kind of semi-retirement, maybe.
Thank you. And frankly, it's bittersweet for me as a personal, because I have a lot of emotion in this. But anyway, I think it has to be done. So,
My question is whether The new owner, Nathan Capusta?
Capusta.
Could possibly come to our meetings the way that you do, so that we can get to know him a little bit, because you've done such a great job over the years, and there's a lot of trust that the board has in you and your performance, but this person, we don't know at all, so.
My short answer is Nathan won't have a choice. We'll write that into the contract.
Okay.
He's very personable. He would want to be here even if he didn't have to be.
Okay.
You'll like him.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. With that, I will move approval of the reassignment of the contract to Mike DiMalo and Nathan, well, I won't butcher his name.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. If we could have a roll call, please.
Mr. Fardanish?
Aye.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
And Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
All right. And with that, we'll move on to item 18, agreement on consultant services with Peter Cron. If we can have staff report.
So I've spoken to the board before about Peter's role in supporting my transition as a new executive director and in having conversations specifically about some of the major projects that we're working to complete by the end of this year related to the relocation of our household hazardous waste facilities. Peter's experience and relationships throughout the county would serve us well. What I'm requesting is a budget adjustment of up to $36,000 annually, so that would work out to less than 6 hours per week for Peter's time. That's an average, and I expect it'll actually be even lower than that. But sometimes a 30-minute phone call that Peter undertakes would have taken me 10 times as long to get the same result. So I feel that's money well spent and will support the IWMA in being much more effective in seeing these projects move forward positively. So that proposal for an as-needed consultant services contract with Mr. Cron is before you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I'll start with Charles.
Thank you. Yeah, so this is as needed. In other words, you'd not necessarily use up all $36,000. That's just what you're authorizing you to do. So you will call him on an as-needed basis for assistance on these projects is the premise?
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And so along that line, you would simply, it's more of you seeking him out for expertise. It's not him having oversight over staff or anything going on within the agency.
That's correct as well, yes.
Thank you.
John.
It sounds like it's going to be basically to the end of the year is the scope of the time frame that you're trying to use, Peter, to get this project completed.
That is my biggest need is between now and the end of the year, particularly for the Morro Bay facility. There is no specific end date for the contract, but for the, you know, however long it lasts, it'll be below that $36,000 for the total amount.
Very good. Thank you, Kobe.
Any other comments coming down towards this end or questions? Okay, with that, I'll open.
So I understand you're looking for specific expertise of Mr. Cron, Peter Cron, but it seems like the contract is going to be like, you know, there's no end to it, and maybe you need him only maybe for another month or two. So why don't we just put that in the contract for until end of the year versus, you know, no end to it?
Well, if we wanted to put a date certain, I would say at least 10 months because there might be some work going into the new year that we would ask him for specific support for.
I mean, I know when when we were introduced to you and we hired you, I realized that there was going to be a transition period. But, you know, I thought maybe, you know, we had talked about 6 months. That would be it, which, again, puts us sometime in January. For me, I'm not really comfortable keep going, you know, going much longer than that because obviously, I think maybe you've done a great job, and it is your own fault, but you're very capable of doing what's necessary. You have the general managers throughout our jurisdictions support. You have all the waste haulers support. You have a great staff that's fully right now. Everyone's at the positions are full, and you bring in on a new deputy director. So unfortunately, there are things that I've seen now. I guess I'm a newbie, but you know, with the financials and things like that, I just think maybe it's time to move on, and I'm okay with just a couple of more months, but I don't really want to, you know, I'm not comfortable pushing it out that far. So if the contract could be changed to till end of the year, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, let me go back to Charles.
Yeah, I want to clarify, because I was confused, and you said through the end of the year, because the end of the calendar year is only, you know, less than 7 weeks away, or basically 6 weeks away. I would agree, though, that if it went to the end of the budget year, June 30th, not beyond that, because otherwise we would, I mean, it's not really a line item. We're adding it as a line item. So I would not want it to go beyond June 30th. But I feel you're going to use it judiciously as you need it to take advantage of past institutional knowledge and past relationships in the county. So like you said, save you time. So I feel okay with it, but I wouldn't want it to go beyond June 30th.
I'm very comfortable with June 30th. It'll probably wrap up sooner than that.
Yeah, well, you stole my lines. That's just exactly what I was going to suggest, that in order to contain it, and then as you look at the new budget year, if you feel that you still need that kind of local expertise support, then you can just propose it in the next round. Okay, thank you.
Okay, with that I'll open it for public comment.
Julie Tacker. When I read this, I was in disbelief, and I'm really disappointed. And I can't imagine that you can't do this. I know you can. And $36,000 is ridiculous. That's a lot of money. But it's the optics. What you're cleaning up is Peter Cron's mess. And now you want him to help you? I think it's a bad idea. And I think it reflects on you as board members if you do this. And this agency has seen enough. It's seen enough. And as I've pointed out to you throughout this agenda, everything you've done today is Peter Cron's mess. And I just don't get it. I don't see how he has magic power over moving a household hazardous waste station. He isn't magic. You have a new deputy director coming on board. I disagreed with you having a deputy director, but you get one. Put that person to work and do it without Peter Cron. And I really hope that you as a board, sounds like you're coming up with a deadline. Just say no. Deadline, no. No deadline, no contract. Say no contract. Because this agency is running smoothly. I don't think you need him. I really don't. Kobe, I really don't. And I hope you agree with me.
So I went back for any additional comments. Actually, I want to kind of jump in here and make a comment. So So I certainly recognize that we had issues with Peter's performance, what I'll call in-house, over the last year and a half. But in the two, particularly the 2 years before that, and even during that period, Peter's connections were invaluable locally and invaluable at the state level. And while I certainly have confidence that we could build those on our own, we want to build them quickly. I also have total confidence in Mr. Skye's ability to manage whatever that issue might become. I trust that, let's say, protect staff. I hate to use that term because I don't think that any consultant we need to protect from any consultant. But I agree with, let's put a parenthesis on it and make it the end of the year. But I'm Peter Cron did a lot of good stuff for this agency in the 4 years that he ran it, and I do not want to see us miss out on any of his knowledge. So I do want to move forward with this. I'll go to Jan and then John.
Yes, I agree with what you're stating in terms of Peter's ability to be of great use in this particular regard. And also, I trust that Mr. Skye will be able to use his services judiciously. So when the moment is right, I would like to make the motion to approve the contract with the amendment that it lasts just until the end of the present fiscal year.
I'll second that. That's exactly what I was going to go
for. Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah, you go ahead.
If the moment is right, I would like to make that motion.
So we have a motion and a second. Any additional comments? With that, we'll move forward with roll call.
Mr. Fardanish?
No.
Mr. Robert?
No.
Mr. Borbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
With that, we'll move on to the ad hoc committee for the 5-year strategic plan.
Thank you. The most recent strategic plan was adopted by this board in 2021, and as we're coming up on the conclusion of that 5-year period, most of the objectives in the strategic plan have been completed. The other major objective of the strategic planning committee that was formed earlier this year was to guide the new fee structure. That being completed in June, staff is recommending to bring the ad hoc strategic planning committee back together to specifically focus on the next 5-year strategic plan and otherwise provide direction to myself and my team as we move forward into the next 5 years of the operation of the IWM.
Any questions here? And then I'll have some. John, you're...
No.
This is part of my venue here to select these people, and I have asked Navid and Cindy and Charles to head up this strategic committee. I think we get a nice mix there of new and old and different kinds of agencies. So those will be that group going forward. I'll open this to public comment, if there's any public comment on this. Okay, is that all we need? Okay. And with that, we will move. Do we need a motion?
I would do a vote.
Okay, I'll move that we appoint Cindy Edwards, Charles Barbeau, and Navid Fendish?
Fardanish.
All right.
I'll second.
We have motion and a second if we can have a roll call. Sorry.
Mr. Fardanish?
Aye.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
And Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
And with that, we'll move on to item 20, board comments and communications. Dan?
Yes, I have a comment, which is that my city council is very supportive of the IWMA and very enthusiastic about it. And several of the newer city council members have expressed interest in representing our city on this board. And since this is, I have discovered, is my eighth year on the this board, I've decided not to reapply for the next fiscal year. And so this may be my last meeting, or it depends when the new appointment is made, which might be in January. But I just wanted to let you know, I had given Sky Covey, Kobe Sky, a heads up on this, and I've enjoyed serving on the IWMA very much. I will keep reading the website, and I will pipe up now and then and make comments and you know, keep in touch. It's a great organization, really doing fantastic, very important work. So thank you.
Ms. Burbell?
Yeah, I was going to comment. I'm sure as elected folks, you've probably all done ride-alongs with your police department, your fire department. But recently I did a ride-along with waste management, garbage truck run, and it was very interesting. And I think as members of the IWMA board, you might want to consider making that arrangement and riding along with your hauler for a half a morning at least, or for a morning. So,
surprise or assurance will...
Yeah, the only problem is you have okay. The only problem is you have to start early. You had to be there at 5:45.
Okay. All right.
I just want to comment on the IWMA summit. I know there were several board members that attended, and I think it was a great summit. And I want to really thank the staff. I mean, the teamwork, the way you guys were working that summit, that was incredible. I really appreciate it and really proud to be part of this board. So thank you, Kobe, and thank you, staff. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. All right. And with that, we're adjourned.